Hi, everybody. My name is Stephen B. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I want to keep the energy going the way that it is, because where I'm from, we hoot and we holler, right? We make noise. And you guys have been like a little bit like a proper English church a couple of the times this week. I want to be more like a Pentecostal revival. So let's see what you guys can do. Like I said, my name is Stevie B. I'm a recovering, recovered alcoholic. And I say I'm recovering and I'm recovered because I recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, like my brother said today earlier. Which means I process things differently than I did before. I look at alcohol, I smell alcohol different than I did before. And when bad things happen, and they will for all of us, everyone will have their time in the bucket. My first response is not to think what I can use, but think on the tools that you guys have given me, what I can use. And so that's recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But then I also say I'm recovering because I have an ongoing mental illness that changes its face all the time. And the things that I came in with 31 years ago is not the same defects of character that I suffer from today. And we'll get a little bit into that. I'm from New York, but people say Florida is because I live in Florida. But if you ask me where I'm from, I say I'm from New York. Because once you're from New York, you always identify being from New York. And Florida is just a place that I live in, which is awesome. I love Florida. It's amazing weather. It's very, very similar to here. And being from New York, being from D.C., when you're from the northeast of the United States, there's certain things that come with it. And one of the things that comes with it is you really do feel like you're in the center of the universe. And I'm not saying any of it's true. I know the whole world centered around New York. Like D.C. would have been like outside of New York. Bermuda for sure was outside of New York. And so I grew up with this entitled thinking I knew everything. By the way, I just want to say thank you to the committee. And thank you for the incredible job you've done. From what I understand, this is like an insane asylum, this room, right? It's like, and when you walk in here, it was like beautiful. And there's like medical tents in the back that they put like dresses on. I mean, this is pretty incredible. So thank you to the committee. Thank you for everything you've done. Thank you for all the hard work. Darren, I want to thank you, Darren, for continuing to write emails and do all this stuff. All the people that are here that did such hard work and the love that has been shown to me and the other speakers and the rides and the caring and the amount of love that was poured out for all of us. I can only speak for myself, but it's overwhelming. The love of this of your island is really overwhelming. The moment you step foot in here, we were welcomed by Auntie Barbara, who's now my new aunt. Rocky, you know, they rushed me, and I didn't realize he was sober since Moses was in the book. I thought Rocky didn't understand the question when they said 50 years, and he stood up and said, "No, Rocky, no, no." They asked how many years. 50 years. That's amazing. Can we just give Bermuda Alcoholics Anonymous, Rocky, Auntie Bar, all the people here, can we just give this a round of applause, please? Because from what I understand, it's not that easy to get sober here. The entire island is built on rum. I'm sitting next to a beautiful man by the name of Scott today who gave me the whole history of, well, some of the history. And it's really, I mean, everything around here is drinking. I haven't been to Front Street, but I want to, just from your story. I have never drank rum, but I was thinking about it during this weekend. I mean, you guys really know how to party. And what I want to tell you is that I'm a real alcoholic, but I'm not a pure alcoholic. And I'm not going to get into drugs or like you said, dry goods. I'm not sure where that came from. But for me to say that drugs is not part of my story would be silly. Like if somehow I digress and I say I was rolled up in a carpet for 3 days in a hotel room because I thought it was a good hiding place, it's not from scotch. You know what I'm saying? That would be inauthentic. If I say I was peeping out of a hotel room for a week with one eye, that's, you know, not rum. I'm not saying I'm going to say any of that stuff, but if I did. So The reason, and people often say, well, are you sure you're in the right? I'm in the right program. I'll tell you, I'm in the right program. Drugs brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's not my problem. Alcohol was not even my problem. That was my solution. I was born with a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that had nothing to do with the substances that I imbibed that gave me the relief that I was looking for. Before I ever took a first drink, I was an alcoholic. And I did alcoholic things with many years of sobriety, in sobriety, and by the time I was 12, I was still sober and I was acting alcoholically. I lied when truth would have been just fine. I had low self-esteem when I shouldn't have. I heard some of your stories during the weekend, and you grow up in alcoholic homes and different things, and the Al-Anon speakers were so, you know, so heart-wrenching, but I didn't grow up in that. I grew up in a very well-adjusted, type A, successful. My mother was one of the first women chiropractors in the state of New York. She was holistic in our home. My dad was a businessman / gangster sort of type of person. And alcohol was always around. But it wasn't abused in my family. It was just used. There was a different type of situation. See, my dad, I'm half Jewish and half Catholic, which is bipolar disorder originally. It's very confusing. It's very confusing because on Friday nights you pass the matzah, but on Sundays you praise the Lord. So it's very confusing. And by the way, your first drink is Manischewitz Jewish table wine. That's what Concord Grace, that's Jewish. You stole that from my people. Vernon and I had our first drink with the first type of alcohol. I thought that was amazing. Concord grape wine. It's called Manischewitz, by the way. The Jews invented it. You stole it. So alcohol was always around. My dad grew up very poor. My dad was a very poor Jewish man from Manhattan. And he did not have the ability to go to doctors. My mother, on the other side, is the Italian side, and it was a different type of thing. My dad, he ran the household in an amazing way. He was an amazing man, told me he loved me my whole entire life, but a very serious disciplinarian. He fought in the Korean War on Pork Chop Hill, so he was a hero. His whole platoon got destroyed. He was one of eight that came back, but my dad did not believe in doctors. My dad believed in home health care, and what it means is that if you had like a sore throat, that was peppermint schnapps. If you had stomach ache or loose stool, that was blackberry brandy. If you had a cold, that was another type of liquor. So what happened was I developed a lot of colds, stomach issues, and sleep issues. A big one for me was the sleep one, because that was always a little bit stronger. And so I had a lot of ailments, like the big book says in Dr. Alcoholic Addict. It says, I never took a drug that I didn't have symptoms for, but I developed a lot of symptoms. And so for me, the alcohol was never abused, like I said, but it was definitely used. And I remember in my home, that when my parents on Sundays, we would always have Italian dinner in my grandfather's home, and they would sit and they would talk. They would have parent talk around scotch, parent talk around scotch. And then we would go down to the basement, my little sister and I, and we would have children TV, not supposed to be around alcohol, but we were in front of the bar. So we would have our own talk. My sister wasn't a drinker. My sister's straight-laced to this day, but I would try little things and I would become happy. And she loved when I was happy because I was always happy on Sundays. But I was temporarily happy because I have this inside God-sized hole that always is gnawing at me. It's like a rubber band that's around my chest that tells me something's wrong when nothing's wrong. And so I developed lying as my first alcoholic skill. Is there any amazing liars in the past? Well, you are an amazing, Abednego, come on, Abednego. Come on. Abednego is a liar now, I'm going to tell you right now. I was a liar when lying wasn't even in. I told stories. I think you said this too. I had a friend that was incredible in martial arts, and he went to China. No, not martial arts. I'm sorry. He went to soccer. True story. Went to soccer. My best friend. When he went to China, I made up a story that I went to Okinawa. Now, we live in a small neighborhood. The story was never going to fly. People knew I didn't go to Okinawa. But it was during the time of Karate Kid. I bought the Nippon thing. I bought the outfit. And I would tell lie after lie, because if you feel like a nothing, when you lie, you can feel like a something. Now, that's what alcohol did for me. A person that felt like a nothing, alcohol made me at least an almost. And if I drank enough, it definitely made me a something. And if that happened to you, you don't just give up alcohol because you have some little consequences, like jail or losing an eye. Small stuff like that's not going to make you stop drinking. You're going to push through. Because you know that alcohol is not the problem. Alcohol is the solution. So I'm 12 years... First of all, in my neighborhood, in New York, everything is separated by blocks. I don't know if you have that here. I don't know if that's the way that the parishes are. But everything in the Northeast is blocks, right? We're in blocks. And your block is your hood. Your block is your people. And in my block, it turns out that everybody had big brothers. So there was the Wagamans, three brothers, the Cohens, three brothers, the Mundingers, three brothers, the Woolies, three brothers. And I had a little chubby sister. So when you have a little chubby sister and you walk to the playground, you don't get any juice in my neighborhood. You get juice if you have big brothers, because that's your gang. That's the ones that teach you how to be somebody. That's the ones that teach you how to play sports. And I had this little sister with holding my little hand with a little chubby hand. You get no juice in my neighborhood. So I always felt like I was always behind the ball of the people that had the team behind them. And I felt like one of the reasons that I had this angst is I had no backup. And there might have been some truth in it. I didn't have any backup. And I always felt low self-esteem. And then one day, we had a new coach that came to school. This old, by the way, everything I tell you is true. I know it sounds like I'm making stuff up. Julia, this is true stuff. Because I see you sitting there like in disbelief. We had a new coach that came to town, and the coach was looking at the roster. And I went to a big school, 2,000 kids, high school. 500 in a class. 500 in a class. Why, there wasn't even a joke in that. 500 in each class, there's four grades, 8 through 12. 500 in the class, there's 2,000 kids. And the coach came in and he looked at my name and he said, Boyarski. That's my last name. He goes, Boyarski. I go, yes, coach. He said, does your brother play for the Pittsburgh Panthers? I go, yes, he does. I don't even know where that came from. I have a stepbrother who's a plumber from Massachusetts. But at that moment, my life changed for the better. All my friends looked over me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, that's my brother. Now, I don't know if this happens to you. I tell a story so long that I can't tell between the true and the false. And I got newspaper clippings, jerseys. When he was drafted into the NFL, I had a party in school. That is the story of my mental illness. And I had never had a drink. I had never had a drink. And I was a full-blown alcoholic. Just add alcohol to continue the story. The toughest kid in my neighborhood, his name is Kevin. He was Kevin. And I always wanted to be around. I love to gravitate towards the cooler, the tougher, and because I want to be with those guys. But I knew Kevin would not want to hang out with me. So the first time that my parents were ever out at the exact same time, my mother was in the hospital, and we had a funeral going on in the family, and my mother and my father both were not home. And I went to Kevin's house and I said, would you like to come hang out with me? We used to say play with me, but you can't say that anymore. So I'm updating the story. Remember we used to say, would you like to play with me? But now you go to jail. There were simpler times, simpler days. So I'm going to update it. So I said, would you like to hang out with me? He said, why? And I said, because I have guns. Because my dad, may God rest his soul, like I told you, is a Korean War hero, and we had guns. And that was the one thing that nobody in my neighborhood had. They had strength, they had sports, but we had weapons. And I said, why don't you come over? We'll blow some stuff up. He came over, and we blew some stuff up. But then he went to leave. And when he went to leave, all the low self-esteem, all the don't leave, all the abandonment, that I didn't have any of these terms back then at 12, everything, I knew it would go back to school the next day that he came and left. And I said, don't leave. You could shoot at me. It came just out just like that, just like when I said I had a brother. You see, my entire life, I've done things in the moment to forego the consequences that are on their way, to experience whatever the pleasure is in that second without thinking it through. And if I'm not careful in sobriety, I could do the same thing. This one day at a time principle for me sometimes is a 1 hour at a time principle. I cannot take for granted anything I have. I've not arrived. And when I said shoot at me and I thought I could move fast, I lost. And I lost my right eye, which is another thing we have in common, which is so cool. And that changed everything for me. I couldn't get into the military, which I thought I wanted to do. I'm not sure if that was I'm not saying that was my calling or my thing. I probably was going to join for the wrong reasons. But everything changed on that day. That day that I got shot in the eye was the day that my path took a different turn. Now, God still worked it out, got me to AA. I finally arrived. But it was a painful process, losing my eye for a year and then trying to rebuild it and taking narcotics, obviously, at 12. Definitely helped me to get along my way, but it did not make me an alcoholic. The narcotics did not make me an alcoholic. The gunshot did not make me an alcoholic. Turns out that my birth father died when I was born. That did not make me an alcoholic. None of it made me an alcoholic. I was an alcoholic before any of it. And alcohol was my solution. There's nothing that makes me or made me feel better than one drink. One drink loosens up the rubber band that's around my chest. One drink tells me everything's going to be okay. And two drinks tells me everything's going to be okay and you're okay. Three drinks, I'm sleeping with people I wouldn't have lunch with. That's alcoholism. Maybe four drinks on that one. Four drinks. I had to check my story there for a second. You know what I'm saying, Auntie Barbara. I overshot that one. And so I come from New York from the 80s. And New York in the 80s was a New Jack City type of situation. And I'm not going to talk about cocaine, but I just want to say I did love the smell of cocaine very much. Tell Andy Barber what that means. Right? Mark, relax. Mark, I'm not going to get into drunk, though, I promise. I just want to tell you that's how it happened. And you can't afford it when you're in college. You cannot afford that. It was even though it was flowing. So I never really got into it. But then my uncle passed away. My uncle was a genius doctor in Fort Lauderdale, head of intern, had a beautiful home on the water, was a genius. He went to the University of Bologna in Italy and learned how to be a doctor in Italian while learning how to speak Italian at the same time. Like, I failed out of English in America. You know, that's the difference. And so, but he died on the bottom of a swimming pool, drunk. After one night on spring break, he went out with some of the people and went to a restaurant and died drunk. A millionaire back in the 80s, drunk. Because this disease does not care how smart you are. This disease does not care how beautiful you are. Doesn't care where your family came from. Doesn't care the boarding school you went to. Does not care. It is the rapacious creditor, as our literature says, which means it's the creditor that does not give up. It's patient. It's tolerant. It's baffling. And it'll wait till you have your guard down. We did not know about alcoholism in our family. Nobody had alcoholism in our family. And yet, if alcoholism was running rampant and we did not know what it looked like, we certainly did not have a name for it. And my uncle died on the bottom of a swimming pool. May God rest his soul. 42 years old. and left a lot to me as the only male heir in the family. And so now I'm in college. I have a smelling problem. And I have money. You put the two to two together, bam. I'm Mr. Generous. My stuff is your stuff. We all party together, president of the fraternity. Now, I do want to say, different than a lot of the people that spoke this weekend, yourself, Auntie Barbara, you guys had fun. You said you had fun out there. You had fun out there. I don't remember fun lasting long for me. My fun was very fast. I think the difference between pure alcoholic and real alcoholic that did drugs is that we come in faster because it hits our bottom. I wasn't a social crack user. You know what I'm saying? I didn't go to the bank after using, you know, I didn't go to work. I didn't put on pants, you know, none of that stuff. So when you're not showering, you have to come into the program much faster. And so I had a lot of money, and then all of a sudden it would poof, it was gone. And then the party was gone. And then I wasn't the president of the fraternity anymore. I was like a homeless, kicked out of college, ex-president, junkie, ran back to his parents, because I don't know about it happens to you, but when you have money, it doesn't seem like a problem. But when the money runs out, I find out I have a problem. And so I ran home and I told my parents I had a problem. And there's a little funny story right before then, because there was actually some relief. This is a true story. When you meet my mother, and I'm going to bring her here, God willing, because I just love this whole island and everything about what's going on here. I had, when I ran out of money at the end, I was a destination waiter, like the waiters from, Dirty Dancing, where you go to a resort and you get the same waiter for the entire week. And at the end of the week, they give you an envelope. Jewish people give you an envelope, or Italian people, or whoever's coming to the thing. They give you an envelope and there's a lot of cash in the envelope. But I hit a deer, during the week, and I destroyed my car. You don't probably have that situation here. I'm sure you don't have a lot of Bermudian deer here. But so I crashed my car by hitting a deer, and I called on my parents and I said, the car is destroyed. I'm not going to be able to get the envelope on Sunday. Could you send money up? And they sent a bunch of money up and to fix the car. And then what happened was I was hitting a deer subsequently every week. Every week was a different deer. And so when I came home to tell my parents that I was an addict, they were like, we're so relieved. We thought you were a moron. You know, that's a true story. I'm like, I didn't hit any. One deer. I hit one deer, but not seven deer in a row every week. And they sent me to some of you guys. We went to the same tribute center. There's a lot of people here that talked about Hazelden this weekend. Hazelden. I went to a place called Hazelden for kids. I just turned 21. And I was there specifically for one reason. I hadn't even started drinking yet. I mean, I drank, but it wasn't my, I didn't go to Hazelden because I drank. I went to Hazelden because of the other substance, the dry goods. A lot of them, like Costco. And when I got there to the treatment center, before that, my mother made me watch a video called 28 Days. Oh, no. Clean and Sober with Michael Keaton. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that. It's VHS. And that's a tape for you young people. Stick it in the girl in the black. There was a thing, it was a tape. You stick it in the machine. You rewound it, fast forwarded it. Ask the guy next to you. And she made me watch this 28 Days with Sandra Bullock. And she said, this is where you're going. This is what it's come down to. But the movie, Michael Keaton. I'm sorry, Michael Keaton. I got two different errors. Clean and Sober with Michael Keaton. And it's dramatic. But the movie also shows like a good time in treatment. And like a lake, and there's a boat and milkshakes and different things like that. And my mother's like, pack, you're going to treatment. Now, we had never met anyone that went to treatment. This is the 1990 in my neighborhood. Nobody went. Not one person I had ever met had ever been to treatment. And they sent me off to treatment, but I packed my own bags. And back then I was into bodybuilding and muscle pants, right? You remember the muscle pants? They're like almost like pajamas for adults, very thin. And I would wear these white t-shirts. I don't know what you call them here. White t-shirts. We call them wife beaters or something like that. What a terrible name. I think they should rename it, but that's what I wore. And I had 5 gold chains and I had amazing hair and I traveled with 6 or 7 bottles of hair gel at all times. And so my mother's like, watch the movie and go pack. And so I packed the way I always did, you know, muscle tees, muscle pants, which are basically pajamas, everything I would pack for spring break in Florida. But then they send me to Minnesota in the winter. And when I get to Minnesota, it's 40 degrees, 40 Fahrenheit. And I never experienced, oh, no, not 40 degrees, 40 degrees below zero. Like mind-blowing cold, like Fargo cold. And I'm like in a t-shirt. I'm like, yo, the kid is here. You know, I think I'm going to like the movies. And so they whisk me off to the treatment center, Hazelden for Kids. And then I see the steps for the first time. And I see the word alcohol. And I call the concierge over because I was like that kind of a guy. I'm like, excuse me. I'm not here for, I put down my 3-piece matching Gucci luggage. I'm like, excuse me. Concierge, which was like a BHT tech in a treatment center. I'm like, I'm not here for alcohol. I'm here for the dry goods program. And he said, well, we do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous here. We don't drink. I said, I know we're not going to drink here. I saw the movie. I know you don't drink. But I'm not here to get off drinking. I just turned 21. When I go back to college, I'm not going to do the dry goods, but I'm going to do the other stuff because I'm a normal person. And I hope... And I have a $25,000 check in here from Stan Boyarsky, which is my dad. And that was like big money. And I'm like, I'm not here for no alcohol. And the guy goes, well, you could leave. I go, well, I'm going to leave. And he goes, yeah, you can leave. I go, no. Maybe I'm going to leave. He goes, well, then leave. I go, I'm going to leave. Like I was insisting on my bad plan, and I was hoping at any time they would change the rules for this New York Jewish Italian kid that was coming in a t-shirt. But when I went to leave, I think another person told the same story today. When I went to leave, oh, I think it was you, Vernon. It was negative 40 out with snow drifts. Nobody could leave that place. It was like The Shining, like the hotel you put me in. And nobody could get out. Of course nobody was going to leave. You would die if you left. They didn't have any AMAs. Nobody left against medical advice. You would die on the tundra. And I tell you that story because it doesn't matter why you're here tonight. It doesn't. I stayed because it was cold. So Stephen, my good-looking, beautiful, dressed brother in the pink shirt, it doesn't matter why you're here. Whether your wife ordered, court ordered, police ordered, job ordered, children ordered, you're here. Once you're here, you're off the hook. You never have to take another drink or drug ever again, even if you want to. You are off the hook. Let's give God a round of applause for that. Did I know I was off the hook? No. Did I want to be off the hook? No. I came for one substance and one substance only. I wanted you to fix me up, 28 days spin dry me, send me off with a relationship like the movie and get me back to college. And it turns out that my parents had joined a program called Naranon and Tough Love. It was a thing in New York called Tough Love. Okay. Vernon knows what that is, right? That was Tough Love program. And they taught my parents this new language. We didn't cause it. We can't control it. We can't cure it. I call them up after I get kicked out on the street. They're like, it seems like you have a problem. I'm like, where are my parents? They had brainwashed them. Al-Anon brainwashed my parents. I'm like, it's freezing here and I'm woefully underdressed. We love you and we cannot help you. You know what you ladies do. And so my parents pointed me back to AA. I got kicked out of the treatment center. I got kicked out of the halfway house. They pointed me back to AA. And you guys loved me when I was absolutely unlovable. Imagine the way I was 35 years ago. If you see how outrageous I am today. I don't know if you saw my blue pants yesterday. Can you imagine the way I was 35 years ago? I was out of control. And I arrived at my first AA meeting and I was like, the kid is here. And I remember afterward, people would share in the group, like they would always share like something like something rude right after I would share. It would always be something like, you know, when your head pops out of your tush at 5 years, or when you stop talking like a moron. It was always like right after I would share. I'm like, it always seems to be the same theme in these groups. And you guys loved me when I was absolutely unlovable. And Alcoholics Anonymous loves you when you're absolutely unlovable. If you're unlovable. I was unlovable. I was unlovable. I didn't love myself. I didn't even like myself. Forget about love myself. I didn't like anything about me. Everything about me was from the outside. The muscles, the t-shirts, the chains, the hair gel. Everything was outside myself. I had no inner worth. I had no self-worth. I had no God worth. I didn't know who I was. If you were a Democrat, I was a Democrat. If you were a Republican, I'm a Republican. Not that I knew anything about politics, but whatever you were, I was. You rode horses, I rode horses. And I did it yesterday. Same thing as you. Alcoholic, same as you. You went to France, I went to France yesterday. You went to China to play soccer, I went to Okinawa to study with the masters. Which part of Okinawa? The Japanese part. Which masters? You know the masters. And that was my, I was so full of poop. I started to work the steps with a sponsor, and I didn't see how any of it could relate. I mean, my defect of character was dry goods and alcohol. After I figured those two things out and I wasn't using any one of them, I figured, what was there to change? I mean, look at me. It's close to perfection. And the truth is, I was a defect that had really no character. But I was certainly a character. And I got like 9 months of sobriety in Minneapolis. Minneapolis AA is phenomenal. And I got this tough sponsor by the name of Jerry Bear. And he started to give me some direction. If you're here, guys, if you're here and you don't have a sponsor, get a sponsor. You don't do this. Matter of fact, you don't have to do this alone. There's nothing that you have to do in AA alone. There's people that are, I mean, if I was here between Auntie Barb and Rob, I mean, I would be so connected like within a week. There's so much weight and depth of what you have here. And there's only 250 alcoholics on the island that are in AA. And like 10,000 that need to be here. And millions of gallons that are going around. What you have here is precious. We have 250 person meetings.
Yes.
What you have here is precious. Did I know that? No. I thought it was a bunch of dull people. No, my first 5 years, I thought it was amazing. You're taking me around to meetings. I'm meeting girls. I'm going to different ding, bing, 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 dances. You know, dances. You can do the fellowship for a long time until you can't. And I got to step 6 and 7, right? I got to step 6 and 7, and I'm a smart guy, college, almost graduate. I mean, I'm this close to graduating. I can see anything that has one paragraph is not that important. When you get to the big book in step 6 and 7, and just like one minute you were like taking 6 months for the fifth step, and the next minute you're on step 8, I realized this doesn't mean, well, defects of character. This whole thing is a bunch of nonsense. And it turns out that the defects of character in my life killed me in sobriety. Because if I put a broken car into a garage for 5 years and I don't work on that garage, I don't work on the car, and I go back after 5 years to that broken car that's been in the garage and it hasn't done work on itself, or hasn't had work done, that car is not only broken, but it's 5 years older broken. So I'm 5 years in AA and I'm still working on the outside, building up this temple of the gods. Now I'm taking steroids. I got extra hair gel all in the front. I bought myself a triple black Mustang Cobra that I park in the handicap spot right outside the Alano Club. Top down. I take sponsees in there five at a time so you guys can see me. I come in 3 or 4 minutes late to every meeting with my t-shirt so you can see how big my muscles are. And I'm getting sicker by the moment. Yes. I full-blown alcoholism, and I haven't taken a drink in 3 years, 4 years. Full-blown mental, I had sobriety. I was 12 years sober when I get a kid a gun and I told him to shoot at me. Sobriety will never cure what's up here. Only a relationship with God and working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in that order will ever cure what I have going on up here. And that's only cured for the day. I'm only for a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
You know what an amen means? Amen doesn't mean you're religious. Amen means you agree with the statement. That's all it means. People get all, you can't say amen after the third step prayer. Sure you can. All it means is you just agreed with the prayer. It doesn't mean you're a Christian or a Jewish person or Muslim. It doesn't mean any of that. Amen means I agree. And let me tell you something. I was any religion you needed to be if you had the rock or the drink that I needed. I was a morpho-holic. I could morph into anything you needed me to be. And when I fell into a drug that was only for gay people in South Florida when nobody had it, and I fell into that drug after I relapsed, believe me, I hung out at a lot of clubs and go, hey. I had no shame in my game. But that's too far into the story. I want to back up a little bit. I have this gaping God-sized hole inside me. And I'm giving God 20 seconds in the morning, and I'm giving him 20 seconds at night. I'm praying on my knees in the morning for God to keep me clean and sober, and I'm praying on my knees at night and saying thank you to him because my sponsor told me to. I had no relationship. I figured being half Jewish and half Catholic, I had it all covered. I had nothing covered. I knew about God like I knew about Christopher Columbus. He was once around. People tell me, I'm not religious. Don't be religious, but have a relationship. Don't cast out your pearls because you had bad experience in religion. God didn't create religion. Man created religion to get to God. Don't be upset. It's like someone goes to a bad AA meeting and goes, it didn't work. Go to another meeting. Change your home group. Go to a place that fits you. Go to the lunch bunch with Auntie Barbara on Mondays. You have no excuse not to fall in love with alcohol. If you're bored in AA, go start your own meeting. I did that at 2 years sober because I didn't like the way men spoke about women in the men's group I was going. And I said, this is not the way we speak about women. This is not the way we speak about our wives. And they told me to go F myself. And I picked up a pot of coffee. I went to the front of the Alano Club. I got a big book and I started a meeting, a 2 year sober called the Big Book, Higher Powered Big Book Study. And they said, you can't start a meeting when you have the biggest meeting in Fort Lauderdale. I go, well, I am. And I did. And if I go to meetings that are boring or that don't talk about God or talk about only the problem and not the solution, that's not A, that's BB. People say, how do you find all these God meetings? Because when I get there, that's where the God meeting is. We have found a solution to a power from lack of power, which is the problem. And we found a solution that points us to the power. I heard a lot of people talking about higher power in here this weekend, and I think that's wonderful that you're so respectful for the program, but I didn't find a higher power in this program. My wife is my higher power. She tells me what to do, and I do it. I found the highest power in this program, and that's God. And I don't choose to give him a name. He already had a name. I don't have to do anything. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Did I know that? No. And when I saw my wife-to-be riding on an elephant in the circus, I said, that is going to fix this hole that I have in my soul. She's a beautiful Colombian girl from the country of Colombia with a beautiful headdress from Las Vegas. And she was riding an elephant. And she was in the circus that was visiting my work. And I said, Mamacita. If I could get that girl that rode the elephant, that's probably going to fix this terrible thing that I have inside me. I had been getting kicked out of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I headbutted a guy while my sponsor was speaking. He started speaking. I headbutted him. We went over tables in AA. I was kicked out of a lot of clubhouses. I was arrested 2 times in AA. Sober. I was defect running around trying to have character. And I was a character. And I said that before. And so by the time I met my current wife, who was in the beginning was an accomplice, and I pursued her because the stalking laws were different back then, but she finally just gave in. She married me out of exhaustion. She figured I wasn't going to give up, might as well marry him. I was 5 years stark raving sober, and we went to New Orleans for our anniversary because she doesn't know the country. She doesn't know the United States. And I told her New Orleans was jazz. But it turns out New Orleans is Front Street, Bourbon Street, boobies and booze, which is what I like. And I was 5 years sober, and I was sicker than I ever was when I was drinking. And I brought my beautiful, new, innocent, pure wife that only had one drink, just like the Al-Anon lady, one drink. She's not here tonight, but she was amazing this morning. She had one drink in her whole life, and she realized that alcohol wasn't for her, and she did not want to come to the country of the United States to marry a person that was getting dry goods from her country, but that's how it worked out. And we're on a honeymoon in Emeril Lagasse's new restaurant, and it's a fancy restaurant, and the tables are right next to each other, and on the table next to us, there's a people, and they're doing a fine wine presentation. And I had never seen a fine wine presentation. What a fine wine presentation consists of is they were pouring wine into glasses, and then they poured it in the middle of the table. It's like a bong, and then nobody drinks it. And I had never seen that. So I said to the food server on our honeymoon, I said, what is going on over here? I said, that they're drinking fine wine that needs to breathe first. I said, excuse me? That wine is so fine, it needs to breathe first. And at that moment, I became not powerless over alcohol anymore. I said, that's the problem. I went right from Thunderbird, Mad Dog 2020, to dry goods, and I missed fine wine that needed to breathe first. If I would just stop there, I could drink like a gentleman. Because obviously, you don't even drink it. You just talk about it, and you smell it. And then you sip it. And I had never sipped anything in my life. And so at that moment, I believed I was not powerless over certain types of alcohol. And the moment that happens is the beginning of the end. The moment you cannot admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, or at least that you're powerless over alcohol, that alcohol does not become, you become powerful over alcohol, you've lost the battle. And if you stay in that condition for any length of time and you believe that you're not powerless of anything, then eventually you'll pick that up when you're in a weak moment. And I came back to AA for 2 years. I was in AA, and I thought, I'm just waiting for the time to get a fine wine drink. Because I'm not really an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict that likes AA. That was my whole thing in my mind. And so I went out to try to find fine wine after I picked up my 7-year medallion. But you really need to know what you're doing with that. It's not like you can just go to the Japanese restaurant on Federal Highway like I did and ask for fine wine. It turns out it's Japanese rice wine in a box. And I never made it to fine wine or rum, which sounds very fun. And so here I am 7 years in the program. Everyone in AA is in the program that I know. Every friend that I have is in there. My wife is, everything I have is centered around sobriety. And now I'm out. And now I'm going to AA meetings drinking, which is definitely not fun. And I'm telling people that I'm not sober, but I'm not in the problem. And then I stopped drinking out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took up dry goods that come in a pill bottle. And I started taking pills. I don't know how you do that with the dry goods. I'm going to say pills. It's in the big book. And I start going to Alcoholics Anonymous on pills and being chatty. It'll be my chance to share. I was very chatty. If you've ever been around people on pills, they're very chatty. They have a lot of ideas. And so eventually I went back to my drug of choice. And guess what? I became an alcoholic, a real alcoholic. Because after not having alcohol in my system for 7 years, I got thirsty. And I, all the places that were in my neighborhood that I didn't even know served alcohol because I was never drinking. And now I knew that they served alcohol. Like our, I don't know if you have Walgreens, which is like the drugstore, and the other side of Walgreens is a liquor store. And I never even knew that. I never saw it. But then as soon as I started drinking, I saw it. And my beautiful new wife, she was devastated. I had sold her on the dream of Sober Steve. I sold her on the dream that we'd go to church, that we would go to the gym together, that we'd have a life of Alcoholics Anonymous together. And I sold that dream for the idea that I should be able to drink like a gentleman after having 7 years because I only had a drug problem, and I would probably be able to have a glass of wine once in a while at dinner as long as it was something that was expensive. And I talked myself out of this beautiful program that God put at my feet, and it wasn't very hard for me to get in, and I never even thought about drinking the entire time or drugging. He laid it at my feet, and I spit it back in his face. And I said, thank you, God, but no thank you. I would like to have the illusion. I would like to have the responsibility of being able to drink like other people. And none of it worked out. Not one thing worked out. There wasn't one time that worked out. One time I got drunk. I wasn't allowed to get drunk in Florida, so I flew to Minnesota where I got sober by Hazelden, and another guy that was also sober with me 7 years, and he also decided he was going to relapse. I flew out to Hazelden so I can get drunk because I wasn't allowed to get drunk in Florida, because if I got drunk in Florida, first of all, everybody I know in Florida is in AA, so they would know. I told my wife if I ever got drunk, I would come back to AA, so I couldn't show her drunk. And I didn't really get to experience drunk because I was only allowed to have one drink on a Saturday, and that's really hard for an alcoholic to do. So I got on a plane and I flew to Minnesota, not in the winter. And when I got there, we went to a bar. I want to just tell you how my alcoholism looks. I don't know where I am on time, but listen, we got some, just hang in there. We got a lot of stuff to go cover. I want to tell you about my one drunk, because you guys all had amazing times on Front Street and parties and nakedness and a lot of sex with the doctor over there. And I didn't have any of that. So I flew to Minnesota and we had this idea, and I went to the bar, and I had an order from a bar since I was in college. So the bartender comes over and goes, what were you like? I said, now remember, I'm 31 now, and I got sober when I was 24, and I had never been to a bar since. And so I had only college information. So he said, what would you like? I said, I would like to have a fuzzy navel. And so he brings me out a fuzzy navel. And all of a sudden, I'm loose, feeling good. I'm loose. And when I'm around people that don't have a New York accent, especially back then, 30 years ago, then 24 years ago, then I get my accent gets thick. Like the man that was serving the fish here tonight, incredible fish, by the way, Bermudian fish. It was amazing. But I noticed when he saw some of his friends, his accent got so thick, I had no idea what he was saying. He said something about sauce and about tartar sauce, but he became completely Bermudian like in 2 seconds. And that's what happened with me. I got very New Yorkish. And the person in the Midwest, they don't speak like me. And they go, where are you from? I go, from New York. They go, what do you do? I go, I'm an actor. And they go, have we seen anything you've been in? I'm like, have you seen any movies like Goodfellas or any of that stuff? And they're like, yeah, and then you've seen stuff I've been in. And I got back into the role. One drink in, I got back into the role. And they're like, what are you? I go, I'm an Italian actor. They go, do you know Joe Pesci? And I'm like, of course. What about Sylvester Stallone? Everybody knows Sylvester Stallone where I'm from. And 2 drinks into it, my next drink, I'm buying the guy at the end of the bar chicken fingers. I'm like, give that guy chicken fingers. They're like, you're amazing. I'm like, thank you. But this is what happened. Drink 3 came. And I remember we used to get pictures of kamikazes. I don't know if they have that here. That's a college drink. That has something to do with vodka and other things. And I had a 3rd drink. And when the 3rd drink came into me, the guy that I was having a great time with, somehow I thought I was in a Robert De Niro movie. And I said, what are you looking at? And the guy said, well, you just bought me chicken fingers. We were just having a talk about the movies you were in. I go, you got a problem with me? the other guy that I had forgot was in there, he came out. You see, I don't have I don't have the luxury of having a good time because I don't know who's coming out. I don't know if I'm going to wind up in Orlando. One time I got one drink in me and someone said they had good stuff in Orlando. I live 4 hours from Orlando. I was supposed to be at the supermarket getting olive oil for the salad for dinner. I saw a guy in the supermarket. He said, you know, they got good stuff in Orlando. My wife said, where are you? I said, I'm at Disney. She said, well, you're supposed to come home with salad dressing. I said, I'm not going to be home. You see, I don't know where alcohol is going to take me. I get arrested for things that I didn't think I did. I'm a victim of everything. Victims don't recover. And I was a victim of everything. I was arrested for picking up a prostitute sober coming out of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't say that to brag. I want you to know how bad things got sober without God, without the steps. And so my wife finally, which I think is part of the Al-Anon bylaws, she served me with a restraining order. So I think that's part of your deal. And she joined Al-Anon. She got everybody, you know, and I didn't know she joined Al-Anon. And she had the police come over and remove me. And they put me in a treatment. They put me in a detox. And while I was in that detox, I thought I was going back home. And that's when I was served with the restraining order. And then I went to a halfway house, which I did not expect to be able to have to go to at 34 years old. After owning a house, after being the president of my association where I live, after owning a business, after being in AA, now I'm living with other men that I don't know. And I can't call my wife because of the restraining order, and I can't go home. And I'm sober about 30 days. And now I'm doing stuff that I hadn't done for like the last 6 months, which is like shower and shave and eat. Because I did other stuff out there that I'm not going to tell you about. If you could just use your imagination, I was doing club drugs. When you're not really supposed to do club drugs when you're 34, it's really designed for like a younger generation. And I still have a lot of calf problems to this day because for 3 days I was like this. So, explain that. So, I was shot out. And what happened was my wife joined this amazing program that put our marriage back together, which is Al-Anon, which I totally resented because they were giving her fuel to handle me. And I call on my wife and I go, sweetheart, because I came up with this amazing plan. I'd gotten on my knees in the halfway house and I asked God to keep me clean and sober. But as my knees came up to a 45 degree angle, I came up with this plan where I was going to get high one more time just for a couple hours. I was going to have a drink. I was going to brush my teeth. I was going to put my head on the pillow. And by the time the other people came back from the halfway house, I was going to act like, hey, how was your day? My mind went, you know, everything good? Like I had developed some type of junkie superpower in the 30 days. Like I had ever take one drink or one drug in my entire life without causing chaos and winding up in a different state. So it doesn't matter that I get on my knees and I ask God to keep me clean and sober. It's what I do with it. Whether I feed bad Steve or I feed good Steve. If I feed good Steve, if Vernon feeds good Vernon, then good Steve and good Vernon win. If I feed bad Steve wins. That doesn't go away with 50 years or 24 years. The people that we were are still in there waiting for us to take our foot off the gas. Why is there only one person in here with 50 years? Because a lot of people take their foot off the gas. They think they're recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but they realize that that is a new, that's something that you have to renew daily with maintenance of spiritual condition. That's why he's recovered. That's why he's here at this convention. Because we don't arrive until the Lord takes us home. And then you're lucky if you hear good and faithful servant, but not everybody's going to. You don't get to go to heaven because you're a good person. It takes more than that. Takes daily work and a daily reprieve. And I come up with this amazing plan, but I don't have any money. And I applaud you guys that go out on runs with no money. I don't know.
It's very ingenuitive of you, but I need to have some money when I go. You guys just go on runs and figure it out. Dave figures it out as he goes. By the way, did you hear Dave's story today? I came to Bermuda to hear the speakers that came before me. Every one of them. Every one of them, Lydia. Dave's story is going back with me. This is not a joke. David's story is going back with me. Homeless and starving, and he went to get free food and stayed for the AA meeting. And a guy named Mike, right there, said, come on in, we've been waiting for you. That's the hand of alcohol. That's the magical program in. That's the supernatural status that we have. Now you can tap into the hanging in there. You can tap into just staying sober. Or you can tap into what these people have. Life beyond their wildest dreams. Not because they have money. Some of the people are going to get what Dusty has and you travel around the world and go to Zimbabwe and Ugadushi and all that kind of stuff. But that's not everybody. Moshe Shushu and all that. But God will give you a life beyond your wildest dream. It doesn't have to look like Dusty's life. You can clap for that. It can look like 22 years of an unbelievable happy marriage after he drinks right in the beginning and she's ready to walk out and now has this incredible life. Everybody has their own journey. And one of the big problems in the world is comparing your outside with somebody else's inside. My journey is not Auntie Barbara's. My journey is not any of yours. My journey is my journey. My father took me into Manhattan when I was 12 years old and he put me on a stoop and we looked inside a peep show when I was 12 and he said, this is what guys do. And since I was 12 years old, I've had a different image for women and I was a peeping Tom when I was 16. And that's tough when you have one eye. That's a very tough profession. That's not an easy road. Am I right, Vernon? Not an easy road. So my journey is not your journey. Don't try to compare with me. And I come into AA, and I'm in four psych wards in a short amount of time, and then I get in the halfway house, and I come up with this plan, and I call my wife, and I say, sweetheart, could I have $199 for a cell phone because my sponsor lives in California? And she says, hold on, and I think she's checking the bank account, and she had joined Al-Anon. And she called her Al-Anon sponsor, and her Al-Anon sponsor said, give the bum the money now. We don't have to wait 11 months or 12 months to find out who he is. Because she had already went on a suggestion from Al-Anon to get divorce papers drawn up with my parents. They went and helped her. She didn't serve me. It wasn't like that. But she had them just in case. And she calls up her sponsor and says, give him the money. Which I personally think, and I haven't checked it out with General Services, against the rules of Al-Anon. And they give me $199. And I rush over to the cell phone store because I know I have to buy the cheapest cell phone they have so that I could put on a good show. And then from there, I'm going to leave with 180 of it. I'm going to call my wife from that cheap cell phone. I'm going to tell her I'm at a meeting. I'm going to call the halfway house manager and I'm going to go get loaded one more time. But listen what God does. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. If you do different things in accordance to what God is asking you to do at Alcoholics Anonymous, different things will happen and you will come to believe. It doesn't have to be so exotic and so written down and so analytical. If you do things differently according to what God is asking you to do, pick up plates, do ashtrays, do this, do that, and then things will happen for you differently than they would have. You come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore to your sanity because you will start to feel some sanity. And the guy at the cell phone store, listen to what God did. I'm going to get jacked up. Says to me, hey, Stevie B, I saw you yesterday in the Victory AA meeting. Welcome back. I don't think you understand what I just said to you. Yeah. The guy in the store was from AA. The cell phone store was from AA. Do I have to talk slower? Vernon talked faster than me. The guy in the cell phone store is from AA from yesterday, and I don't get loaded. And he takes me out and we have a cup of coffee in the middle of his shift. And 11 months later, I get to go home and in the big bed. And the first night in the big bed, I'm on my knees in the morning and I'm thanking God. Thank you, God, for bringing me back. My wife is downstairs and she's cooking eggs and there's the smell of coffee, not feet. If you've been in halfway, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I love living with a woman much better than five men. And I come up with this idea to turn the mattress over. And I turn the mattress over and there's my stash. Different than you, Mark, because I was petrified. It was the first time I had seen my stash since I came into the program. But I had just gotten off my knees. And I didn't have a God of my misunderstanding. I had the God of the universe. I had the God that the big book talks about, him. I had the God that it says that in the golden text, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to tell everyone about it. Now, had I recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body? No, I was 11 months sober. But I had met the God that created this program. Not a higher power. I met the highest power, the one that wrote the book through Bill and Bob. And I had gotten off my knees and I called my wife and she came up and she was crying and I was crying because the first time in my life ever since I was 12 years old, I was able to say no to a drink or drug. Unless I didn't understand the question. But other than that, I would never say that. And then in my second year, I started the Higher Power Big Book study. And everyone said, you can't study. You only got 2 years. Well, Bill and Bob, they only had 3 weeks when they sat on the edge of the bed. If you're new in here, get to work. Don't wait for the old, Rocky can't do it all. You have 2 days, you have more than the guy that can. If you have 19 days, you have more than that beautiful man that has 18 days. Open the door, pick up trash. Put a smile on your face. You're not dead and you're not incarcerated and you have 2 legs, most of you. And most of you have 2 eyes other than being Vernon. And I got plugged in and I found a sponsor by the name of Russell Spatz that told me to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and find out what they were doing when we read how it works. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. What path is that? You don't even know the path. You've been in AA 7 years. You don't know the path. You don't even know the third step prayer. I'm like, I saw it, but you don't know it. Have you memorized it? No, I don't have a good memory. I bet you'd memorize it if I told you this is a map and this is where crack is at the end. You'd memorize that. I say, you have a point. And I found out who the God of the alcoholics, that they were reading the books. And I started to read the books that they were reading while they were writing the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to do some research. I don't have to be afraid of research. It's in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times. This is the books that we read. This is what we were doing. If you want to see why we said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, find out the path. The speakers all told you the path this weekend. He pointed it out this weekend. Every speaker spoke about the path. That's the path of God. Get out of your own way. Less of you, more of him. I started following men like Russell and all these other people around. Cindy from New Jersey. Started following these people around, realizing that you knew more than I was ever going to know unless I did some of the things that you did and I needed to put the cotton in my mouth. Oh, by the way, in my TC, I had to go around with a sign that said, I am not the counselor, and I'm on feedback restriction. Big sign. I am not the counselor. I am on feedback restriction. Because I thought everybody had what I wanted, and they were willing to go to any length to get it. And all it was sickness. Now, I want you to know something, and I don't want to offend anybody. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I am not what you would call a person that is in love with everything that we're doing here if it wasn't for the one that orchestrated it. Yes. My love is for the creator of this program. And I use the vehicle of Alcoholics Anonymous and use the vehicle of the Big Book to get there. But some days I'm the worst testimony of the big book of alcohol stops. Some days I get in my, some days when everything is going amazing, there's a black cloud that comes over me, never for a full day, never a full day in my entire sobriety. There's a black cloud that comes over me, the same black cloud that used to come over me when I had when I was restless, irritable, and disconnected. Unless I at once get into work with another alcoholic, or at once go to helping someone, at once do something to get out of it. If I move a muscle, I change a thought. If I just try to think my way into right action, it's not going to happen. And I want to share that with you with in 3 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now when I have 23 years and my dear friend has 5 years in 4 weeks from now. I want to share with you that some moments in my life are not perfect because I still have alcoholism, not wasm. And it's not always perfect. I didn't drink because I was well adjusted. Obviously. And so our marriage is put back together and we're in marriage counseling and Al-Anon saved our marriage. Thank you, Al-Anon. And I appreciate it. Give Al-Anon a round of applause. My wife and I go around to different conferences now. She's the Al-Anon speaker. I'm the AA speaker. It's just amazing. Al-Anon's so incredible. And the Al-Anon 10th step is whenever I do something wrong, she lets me know about it. It was a little joke just to see if I get a smile out of the Al-Anon, but they know they can't do that. It's not in the bylaws. And when I go through those dark clouds like I did on Thanksgiving when I had everything to be grateful for, my wife uses the tools of Al-Anon, and she really does use the tools. She said, honey, I didn't cause that. And I can't control it, and I didn't cure it. And I knew if we gave you 30 minutes, you'd come out of it because you have a God of your understanding. And everything's going to be okay. And I didn't need to go rescue you, even though everybody at the party wanted to know where I was. And it was being recorded. And everybody said, what happened to Stevie B? My wife knew that everything was going to be fine within 30 minutes. And it was. But I want to tell you, and Auntie Barbara told us this, and many of the speakers told us this. Alcoholics Anonymous is not going to promise you an easy life. There's going to be things that are going to happen to you. And some of you, it's going to be catastrophic. And we had catastrophic happen to us in our 10th year. We had been in vitro fertilization clinics for 6 or 7 months. We hired a surrogate, which is 99% of the time always works because this is what they do. This is like their profession. It didn't work for us. It failed. Everything failed. And then we finally got pregnant and we were long turned into the pregnant and everything was going great. And I was walking on egg. I was walking on air and I might have lost some of my humility. It's very possible. Because I just was like on cloud nine. And when we went to go in to look at the CD and the woman came in and she said, I'm sorry. And I said, I don't understand what you mean by sorry. She said, I'm sorry. The baby didn't make it. And I said, well, check it again. It doesn't make any sense. Because I'm in AA and I'm in AA and I'm a minister and I take meetings in the treatment centers and I've been serving God for 10 years. That doesn't add up. Somehow I thought that when it says they're going to give you a life beyond our wildest dreams, that everything was going to be perfect for us. And it wasn't. And we already had the baby room built. But you told me everything was going to be okay. And it was. And some well-meaning people in Alcoholics Anonymous said to me that, that God only gives you what you can handle. But we know that that's not true. That's not the truth. The truth is that God gives you the strength to get through things that no one can handle. It's not that God gives people, one person's husband's dying, another child's dying, and then another person just loses a nail. No, that's not how it works. It's bad things happen to good people, and God gives you the strength to get through it. But because I had picked up a prostitute coming out of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not allowed to adopt in the state of Florida. And my wife found that out. The entire story that I just said in a nutshell, she found that out when we were kicked out of the adoption agency during that time. Because it happened before we were married. And she didn't know about it. And the adoption agency called the house and said, a man like your husband can never adopt in the state of Florida. And they told her my record. And now we can't have a baby. We have the baby room built and now we got kicked out of an adoption agency. And I'm not allowed to adopt in the state of Florida, but God does not care what the state of Florida says. God does not care that the police or the judges say you're not going to drive again. God does not care when they pull your license as being a nurse because you took one for you and you gave one to the patient. Because if you continue to serve God and stay close to him, all sorts of remarkable things will follow. And every speaker that came up here this weekend talked about those remarkable things, even in the darkest times. Romans 8:28 says, all things work together for those that love God and are called according to his good purpose. And all of us in here are called according to God's good purpose. We have a mission. And we got a call from the top of the United States by California. We're a state that has reciprocal with Florida, but it's not Florida. And out of all the people in the United States, they picked us to come up and meet this baby on day one of this baby's life. In a state that we had never been to, with a record, we showed up at the hospital, and there was this most beautiful little white, white baby. And I tell you white, white baby because my wife is non-white and I'm like half white, but this baby was super white. We was a part of the country where they make the whitest type of babies. And she held up her son and she said, what would you like to name your son? And we said, Joshua. And she said, why Joshua? We said, because in the Bible, Joshua 24:15 says, as for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord. And she said, well, I'm not religious. And we said, all that means is that your son, our son, is going to grow up in a godly home. And there will be no drinking. And hopefully there'll be nothing that we would ever, ever stand in the way of you being proud of the person that you gave your son to. And 2 weeks later, we came home with Joshua. And there was members of Alcoholics Anonymous that were standing on our lawn with signs. And Joshua went to meetings with me and retreats with me and marches with me. He grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You people at 46 years old taught me how to be a dad because I had no training. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me things that I can never repay. My son's now 13. He's a beautiful redhead. And the reason I share that with you, and I showed some pictures, and Barbara, now you understand why, when you were asking me why he had red hair, I want you to show you how God shows off. My son, who was the whitest white you've ever seen, had no hair. And then one day we came home and he had an entire red hair. The whole head was red. And my son looks exactly like my mom. I showed our table the pictures. Usually if I'm at a church conference, this is when they put up the screen on and see my mom with the big red head and my son with the big red head, with the same nose, with the same eyes, with the same freckles, with the same everything. See, that was God's way of saying I was in everything, Steve. I've been there the entire time. I wanted to just show you this, how much I was concerned with the whole thing, that even when you got kicked out of the adoption agency, even though you lost the baby, even though you guys can't have your own children, I had picked a child up from the top of the United States, the exact child that I picked for you, the exact child to look like your mom. Now, my son now doesn't, and it has nothing to do with the adoption, because even though he knows, it's not like something we ever talk about. He knows, of course, but it's not something we talk about because we just love him to pieces. But the one he's the closest to in our entire life is my mom. He's with her tonight in Florida. And God gave us a life that was beyond our wildest dreams. And I cannot tell you how many times I come into Alcoholics Anonymous in the meetings that I go to, and I see people that have obviously settled for the crouton. They've obviously settled for sober. How do you know someone's eating the crouton? They have just a crouton on their plate. And you walk and you see them and go, how you doing? Hanging in there. They got a fork and they got a knife and they're hanging in there. Arr. They're like the pirates of alcoholics. Arr, arr. Then you come by a Rocky who's got stuff all over the front of his shirt. He's got cracked crab and lobster and prime rib. He's got lamb all over his juices all over him. And he just has a light beyond his wildest dreams. Because why would you settle for sober when you can settle for a life beyond the wildest dreams? Because if you have a relationship with God, if you make him first and foremost, you're going to get sober. But the big book says that AA is just a spiritual kindergarten. Why would you want to stay in spiritual kindergarten? Why wouldn't you want to have it all? I get to travel around the world telling people about what you guys gave to me for free and for fun. I opened up a treatment center that's a faith-based treatment center, and people that nobody wants, that nobody will take, come to our treatment center and we tell them about the love of God and we tell them about Alcoholics Anonymous. My wife has a house called His Grace House. His Grace House. 2 days ago, we had 125 people that came to our party that had nowhere to go for Thanksgiving. I've been invited to go to amazing places like this, Rebecca, and thank you for the committee. Thank you to all you guys for inviting me here. I've got to travel the world telling people what you guys did for me. So I'm not going to settle for a higher power. I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to settle for crouton. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to just do the quote one more time just so you get it, and I'll move on. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling everyone about it and about Him. There should never be a day in Alcoholics Anonymous that we ever settle for a crouton. Not only have we been given a new life, but we've been given purpose. I mean, where else in AA, when you're like, 3 weeks earlier, you're like on a bar, curled up in a fetal position, and then 3 weeks later, someone comes in and you're like the wisest person that they've ever met. And you're like telling them how to run their life. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we have built-in ministry. We have a built-in ministry. Bill and Bob sat on Bill Dodson's bed, alcoholic number 3, when they were all still wet. But why did they make it? Rocky will tell us. Why did they make it? Because they had a mission. They had a purpose. And I want to give you some marching orders. Don't leave this conference and say, yes, it was good and there was good food and then we had rah, rah, rah. Change the way you're doing AA if it's not working for you. If you're only hanging in there one meeting a week or you know people are, change the way you do it. Get back the vim. Get back the vigor. The only way this thing is ever going to make it is if we're exciting and we're attractive. And we're not promoting, but we can't be sitting there like, hey, how you... spending 45 minutes in a business meeting arguing about the size of the cup of coffee. We're the most blessed people. And I got to meet the most amazing people in here. And this is just a little sliver of what we have. Every country, I've been in meetings in Colombia where I don't speak a word of, not a word. I asked my wife, give me one Spanish sentence. She goes, lo todo se puede con Dios. I go, what is that? She goes, you can do all things through God. Came around to my share, I go, lo todo se puede con Dios. They're like, yes! Because we speak the language of the heart, right, Vernon? We speak the language of the heart. We Lydia and I did a heart hug today. I gave Rebecca, I'm going to give Auntie Barbara an uncomfortable heart hug later. Because when I go in for a heart hug, I go in for the love hug. I want you to know the God that's inside me rejoices in the God inside you. And whether you say God bless you or namaste or keep coming back, whatever the term you use for love, remember the 11th step prayer. It is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. May God bless you guys.